Well, technology is constantly changing, and I know if you're like me, it's really hard to keep up with the new gadgets, the apps, and all the other software that we have at our disposal right now. Sometimes it's good to have somebody around who knows what's going on. Larry Mueller here. Peter Green knows what's going on. He comes by once a month to talk with us about technology and personal computers. He's an independent computer consultant, provides great information and resources at Infostar.com. And Peter, great to see you as always.
Always great, Larry.
You recently saw a friend go through a medical crisis, and maybe you can give us a quick summary of what happened here and why it relates to this show.
You know, it was kind of, if you want to say, use the word brewing over a period of time, and the person, close friend of mine, had a variety of medical conditions. So there are what are called classes of drugs that are prescribed. And, you know, you might have several doctors involved in dealing with an individual. And in this case, that's what happened. And these classes of drugs, which have been prescribed over a period of time, and then new drugs factored in for trying a different approach to treat a condition, so you enter in another class of drugs. And a lot of drugs are derivative. So, for example, there might have been something that was on the market for 10, 15 years for a certain condition. And, you know, my background is in organic chemistry, biochemistry, endocrinology, physiology, reproductive physiology. So I understand all these medical terms. I've been in the lab. You know from where I came from. I'm a lab person, very detailed orientated, and then I got into the computers back when, you know, the before the PC was around, and watching all this stuff grow up. So the geek in me knows what computers are capable of. So I'm going through this with this close friend of mine, and experiencing all these different symptoms and problems that are, you know, manifesting themselves in different ways. And, you know, it's a feeling of helplessness because, you know, you're seeing someone going through this and you don't really, you know, you just say, go see your doctor, you know, go and get things checked out. And I got to tell you, Larry, that, you know, I was thinking about all the years I've been doing a show. I almost feel like this is probably the most important show I've ever done in my entire life. And I feel like just almost like blessed to be doing this right now, because to just enlighten people, to empower themselves to deal with what I'm about to continue on with. So you think about all these drugs that someone might be taking, or yourself, and maybe only two classes of drugs and a condition that you have. So what I saw in terms of what prompted the geekness in me to question what was going on, and I've talked to doctors and EMTs and PAs about this and pharmacists, is the medical record-keeping systems that are in place. I'm not going to name any names. It goes beyond that. It's to recognize as an individual that you need to take control of things for your own safety. And doctors and pharmacists and PAs and so forth are using these tools, okay, because they are not computers in their head. As good as you are, there are a few people that are out there that are really good with this. And in fact, an independent doctor looked at this person's condition and, thank God, was able to say, hey, you have this classic condition syndrome because of these drug interactions. So I'm saying a doctor did catch this, but I was questioning, why did it go this long when this doctor caught this condition? And what raised the flag in my mind was, okay, we have these medical record systems in place. We have these pharmacists that are keeping track of what we're taking, and, you know, we're prescribing, and the doctor says, well, do you have, or the pharmacist, do you have any questions? Or, you know, they bring up these things when you pick up the meds. Is that those systems are producing what are called scheduled listings. They're simply spitting out a list of what you take. There are no flags raised. There are no markings on that report that you get when you are finished.
Don't take this if you take that.
Not that it says don't take it, but it says, you know, here is a condition that could be caused because these two classes and your medical condition is causing a problem. There is no information coming from the pharmacist or pharmacy that says the same thing because they have a scheduled listing. So what I did was I said, okay, there's got to be a way to produce an exception report. An exception report basically takes the rules of engagement of data and says, okay, if this and this, then what?
Yeah.
You know, give a result.
And so, there's an app for that.
So I was just going, okay, that's great. And I looked at the reviews and I said, wow, this for $2, $1.99, person can download this app, plug in this information, and do a med check. And lo and behold, all I did was I said, okay, here's a class of drugs. Here's another class of drugs. Here's a class of drugs. Here's a medical condition. Do a med check. And it came up with all these different exceptions. And all I'm saying is for an individual to rely on another individual when a system is in place in two different areas independently and cannot generate an exception report on your behalf to tell you there are red flags, you may want to take a deeper look into, you know, or you may be having a condition because of these interactions that no one else is recognizing, is that these applications to me are life-saving. And when you go to the, I put it as number two on my top 10.
What's it called, by the way?
On my iPhone, it's called Pocket RX. It's called Pocket Pharmacist. It was rated the number one paid medical application. And like I said, it's $2. I don't get anything from it. I'm just pointing people to it because I'm happy to enlighten people that this actually does what it says. For 2011 and 2012, and it was created by a pharmacist. And it's just recognized that it works. And if you look at the reviews of who's using it, it's not just individuals. It's people in the medical field that are saying, hey, and I talked to someone that said, well, they went to their phone and they did this and that. And then, you know, they came up with, you know, okay, well, let's look at something else. So I'm saying they're using it as a tool. So why not you use it as a tool? Because you're relying on a system that does not have those in place. In fact, I don't understand why they don't. Why a scheduled listing is so much more important than an exception report that can easily be flagged on that same, you know, printout. That's all I'm questioning. So I'm saying, you know, for your own benefit, if you're taking a lot of drugs, you or not a lot of drugs, maybe one or two, and, you know, medical condition, and just, you know, all of a sudden something else comes up and says, hey, you may want to try this. You know, you can plug it in, and it's going to show you what's going on. Now, the other thing that I found out was, okay, so now the person has to withdraw from the drug. It's not just yanking it out of your system, Larry. Not cold turkey.
No.
There are issues with some of these drugs for withdrawals. So we started doing research on drug withdrawal, and then you go on YouTube, and there are people that have posted information as related to drug withdrawal and what they're going through. And what's even more enlightening is that there are companies that have done clinical studies on drug withdrawals and so forth, and you can see their findings. There might be like 2,000 or 3,000 cases where they've actually collected the data and said, okay, male or female, and age group, you know, and giving you the percentages and what kind of symptoms you may be showing. And it's just that whole thing is just so eye-opening. It's amazing.
And so it's Pocket Pharmacist, or and we'll talk some more about it
and
later.
And it's available for iDevices and Android. So an Android is Google product. You know, it's the Google operating system for smartphones and tablets.
It's on the top 10 list, and Judith, I think, is also posting it as a a direct link on my Facebook page.
So if I helped one person, Larry, it's well worth it.
Scott in Madison has a question for you, Pete. Let's go to Scott. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hi.
I have a computer that came with the hard drive partitioned into three separate logical drives. And I'm getting messages that one of the partitions is full, and I'm wondering what's the easiest way to get more space allocated to that partition.
Hmm. Well, there's basically two approaches. One is you back off your data and using the operating system. Which operating system are you using?
Windows 7.
Okay. Back off your data. Obviously, you need access to the programs you've installed, and you repartition the drive, so basically reallocate space. Not sure why it was split into three drives. Typically, what happens is you get one that's kind of like reserved for the system,
right,
and then another one that's the rest of the drive. You can also download, there are some applications out there that will allow you to repartition the drive, like dynamically change it. But before you do something like that, I would still make sure you have a couple of copies of your precious data backed up before you do that. And also make sure you identify, your programs just in case something happens.
Right, these were, like I said, they came on the computer. It's an HP laptop.
Okay.
So one's a recovery partition, the other's the tools partition.
Hmm.
So I don't, I'm not putting anything into that thing, or it came preloaded.
Right.
So that's what my concern is. Can I add more space to that, or do I have to create a new partition and then copy that over into whatever the programs are, over into the new partition? That type of thing.
Well, you can resize it and move things around. So Partition Magic is a program that's been out there for a long time. You could probably go to cnet.com and look for partition tools to, so you can, manipulate things. But like I said, when you start getting into that, you're talking to the lower level of instructions between the computer, the hardware, the operating system, storage. And when you start moving things around, if you get one little hiccup and something doesn't work, then you've compromised your system, and you want to make sure at least you have your data backed up.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, Scott. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, Peter Green of Infostar.com, as we talk with him about computers and software. You can join in. The number, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Email from Sandra in Madison, who says, my 4-year-old laptop is starting to show signs of wear. It seems as if all the new PCs use Windows 8. I really don't want a touch environment. Any ideas on how to avoid Windows 8?
Well, you can, if you're looking at buying a new laptop, there's still Windows 7 laptops out there.
Yeah.
I know in shopping online, buy.com and tiger.com, you could probably, go to Amazon and a number of other places. Sometimes they still might give you the choice, but a lot of them are pre-shipped from the manufacturer. So there's still, inventory out there for Windows 7 systems. You just have to, pay attention to it when you're looking at them. As far as, values out there, they're all coming with lots more RAM.
Yeah.
Bigger hard drives, better video cards. Windows 8 is just adding a different layer to doing the same thing. It's, just a new, it's kind of trying to blend the touch environment, the tablet environment, with the newer technology that's becoming more and more common in laptops and, you know, full screen monitors, you know. Personally, the tablet and having the touch is great. In a desktop environment and making that extra reach and effort, yeah. You know, I don't think I'm ready for that method yet. So I understand the concern, yeah. But so right now there's still an opportunity if you're looking at, after 4 or 5 years, and that's pretty much what they consider the lifetime of expensing a computer system from an accounting standpoint and usefulness. They're still out there. They still can be found.
Michelle emailed us and says, when I click on a link in my favorites, the web page will not display. When I type in the IP address and still nothing displays, I get a blank screen. Can't even connect to YouTube. A message and banner below says Google is not responding. And some links will display. She has Windows 7.
This is where having, at least a couple of browsers on your system will give you a little bit of hint as to what may be the problem. So if you're experiencing a problem with one browser, try it with the other and see how it, what's going on. And these browsers are constantly being updated. And every now and then, an update to the operating system may run interference, especially with, something like Internet Explorer, which is more married to the operating system. So what I usually do is check it with the other browser, and if the other browser is working fine, then that tells me that the other browser that has the issue, you should probably go through and try, locate an update to it and, reinstall it. Another option is using the restore feature for the operating system and going back to a prior date where you knew the problem didn't exist. So when a problem all of a sudden pops up, if you're using the system restore in a Windows environment, the first thing that should come to mind is, number one, do I have a good backup of my data in case, my hardware is going to crap out on me? The other thing is to go back to a prior date that's within, the last day or two and try and do system restore and see if the problem goes away, because there may have been something that happened that just, computers are on-off switches, the zeros and ones, and all it takes is one of them to be off to create a domino effect and other things stop working. So that's where that, using that system restore, making sure it's turned on, and that's in, click on Programs, Accessories, System Tools, and System Restore, or if you right mouse click on My Computer and look at System Protection, and then you'll see System Restore in there. Just making sure that you do that periodically so you have your options to go back in time.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening in. Peter in Stoughton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a problem that occurs in both Firefox and Chrome. I call it hovering boxes. For instance, if I'm on Facebook and I put my cursor over a box that says what's on your mind or make a comment or whatever, I have another hovering box for that same item in it that goes over that space. And it disappears after 3 or 4 seconds, but it's really irritating and it doesn't serve any purpose. And I was wondering, I've looked around in the settings for these browsers and I can't find a way to get rid of it there, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
So you're saying when you're going over like a link?
No. For instance, on Facebook, it's asking me now what's on your mind, and I'll put my cursor over that,
okay,
and a little box will float up with the same thing, what's on your mind, and it's very nicely done. It's got a shadow and everything, but it's also really irritating and pointless.
I thought for a minute it was a ghost image, but it's not a ghosting image at all. It's a solid.
And it's not clickable. It's just like an information piece.
It moves around with the my cursor. It remains there. And even when I'm typing, and then after 3 or 4 seconds, it will disappear. Mm-hmm. But if I move it again, move my cursor again, it reappears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think I know what you're talking about, and I'm not sure whether or not there's a feature in each one of the web browsers that by default has something like that turned on, and it's something to be turned off. But what I would probably search on is like what you're referring to is hovering text, you know, doing like a Google search and putting in hovering text in web browser, turn off or go away, you know, something that can, you know, maybe find a solution to how, you know, what's actually, you know, causing that effect. I know when you do web pages, you can put what are called alternative referrals for describing something.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, like a picture, if it doesn't pop up on your page or if it does, this alternative description will also be available so that when someone is hovering over it, it will pop up and say, you know, that this is what the picture is about.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Right.
Okay, well, hovering, I guess, is the proper term to use in a search. I'll try that again because I didn't have any luck with that before. But
right, but when you look at the answers, try and see, you know, even the wrong answers and see where, you know, how you might be able to ask the question a little bit better. I know sometimes the answers don't pop up in the first, you know, couple of pages of links because you're not quite hitting on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can see what's bringing up the wrong answers, you know, there might be something you have to add a little bit different to get to the right one.
The right place. Yeah, good luck, Peter. Thanks a lot for calling. And Keith in Monroe, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello there. Good morning.
Hi. Morning.
I had a girlfriend call me the other night. I just happened to email her on her, and she was right in the middle of a problem. She got a call from, she turned her computer on, there was a big red message said her files have been confiscated. And this was supposedly from Kaspersky, where she gets file protection.
Hmm.
And they wanted $169 to release her files. And I just happened to catch her on her cell phone. I said, don't do it. She already gave her her credit card number. So I said to see, you're not going to do anything. She said, and they said, well, then your files won't be released. So she just unplugged her computer, and that's the state it's at now. She's afraid to turn the computer on. She called a card company, and they haven't used any of her money or anything. But
right.
Does that sound legit?
No,
no.
What I would do is number one is you can turn the computer on, but make sure it's unplugged from the internet.
Okay.
So it's not online, which would include Wi-Fi access. And then I would probably suspect that there's something already on the system so that you would want to do some kind of, you know, antivirus, malware, spyware sweep on it.
That SpyBot thing?
Well, SpyBot's one. There's Malwarebytes is another. You can also, you'd probably want to make sure you have a downloaded version of something like AVG or Avast or House
right.
Call, and that it's updated,
right.
And you know, do a scan of the system that way.
But all this while you're not on the internet.
All that while you're not on the internet. The other thing is there are programs that you can also use to see if there's anything kind of running in the background.
Okay.
And if you go to my tips page at infostar.com,
right.
The very last tip has got a paragraph about how some of these stealth programs can get on your system.
Right.
And I've used the tools that I mentioned in that tip to expose them.
Okay.
So, for example, that program Malwarebytes that I referred to,
right.
The free version has a tool called, I'm trying to remember, the File Assassin is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So when you identify some of these stealth programs, You can figure out where they are with, I think, Neeber or Neuber is another program that basically in that list, you can download it for free. There are purchase programs, but I found that I was able to get by with a free one, is it will expose the program that is running in the background that you can't see. that has hijacked her system and identify where it is on your computer, and then use the program within Malwarebytes called File Assassin to point to where that program is and actually delete it off of the computer so that it's no longer active.
Would System Restore do anything?
It depends on how invasive those things are, because you know what they actually try to do? They try to cobble that, so you can't do that.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They get real nasty about that and go, oh, well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take away their ability to get back to our prior visit, so we'll disable System Restore. So then that eliminates that option.
What about calling Kaspersky? Do you think about calling Kaspersky?
Well, you see, that's actually a company that does, you know, antivirus stuff.
Right.
So they might be, you know, someone else might be acting under their umbrella to look like it's from them.
So that's not a good idea.
Not a good idea either.
Well, can I download with the computer being off the internet? Will I be able to download the?
Well, you should be using a thumb drive, and you can download the tools that I talked about or referred to off of my website onto a thumb drive, and then put it into that system and install them off of the thumb drive.
All right. Well, that sounds great.
Yeah. The other thing you might run into is you might have to be in safe mode and not in so if you know how to get into safe mode, when you bring it up, you hit the F8 key, and then you go into safe mode, because the problem is in the full operating system mode is that Windows operating system actually starts getting in the way as well, because it's got some hooks in there that you need to have turned off too.
Do I need safe mode in command prompt or just safe mode?
Just safe mode, so you use a Windows desktop.
Okay.
Yep.
Another issue, you should file a complaint with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, because they would follow up. There may be other people who have the same thing and as she had, and so it's well worth it. I'm sure we have the 800 number up for that up on our Facebook page, or Judith will put it up again if we need to.
The other thing is you might, since you're going to be offline, you might be able to identify, you know, within the web browser, you know, the link that it came from, which will, you know, basically be a fingerprint of, you know, who it's coming from.
And it would help the consumer protection people.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Keith.
You got a little homework and a little effort in there, but I know that stuff does work.
Yeah. Don in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I just reinstalled Windows 7. And I'm getting an error that says CMO surrogate stopped working.
Well, the CMOS is referring to your the firmware in your computer.
Uh-huh.
So if you reinstall Windows 7, have you gone into your system manager, the device manager, to see if there are no yellow exclamations?
Yes.
Okay. Have you run through all the Windows 7 updates to bring it all current?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes...
it's possible that it started happening, that it happened before I finished with the updates.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen it in the last 24 hours.
Okay.
Maybe that took care of it.
Yeah, that's possible. Because if you're doing a reinstall, sometimes you've got the interaction of the system board and, you know, the firmware.
Well, I actually reinstalled a factory image.
Okay.
From disk, not straight from a Windows disk.
Okay. You may want to check and see if you can do any updates to your system board, you know, the manufacturer from them. And, you know, just bring that up to date. Because how old is the system?
Oh, just August.
Just August. Yeah, you know, even new systems get updated too.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I would probably look into that. The other thing is you may want to Google search on that and the model of your computer and see if there are other people experiencing that. Because I have seen it where there are I'll give you a perfect example. Someone gave me a laptop. Well, actually, I went out and bought the laptop with a friend of mine. I've told this story before. Brought it back to the house, and brand new out of the box, and I tried to hook up to the wireless internet connection, and it kept flashing an error message. And I rebooted the system numerous times, and I saw what the error message said. So I called up tech support, and you know, we were having a discussion, and they said, well, you have a worm virus. And I said, how can I have a worm virus? This is brand new out of the box, and I've never been hooked up to the internet, but I'm trying to, but it won't let me. I've got this error message. So, you know, brand new out of the box, it already had a bad device driver for the wireless network card. Yeah. So, you know, doing a factory install from the disk does not necessarily guarantee that you've brought it back up to speed. And there might have been an update that you didn't realize that you went through.
Okay, one other quick question. Mm-hmm. Is I'm having this on Firefox and Explorer.
Okay.
Is links don't work. They even like on Google search, I'll click on the link and it does nothing. But if I hold the control key down and open it in a new tab, it works fine. And it's work. It's going on three different laptops. And my wife's having the same problem. And I don't. I'm wondering if it has anything to do with this new type of web page they're using.
No, that's a. So you're having this same problem across three different laptops.
Yeah.
A
lot of links. Most links work, but every once in a while one won't. And then if I hold the control key and hit the same link again, it opens up in a tab just fine.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the web's been going through a transition with, you know, a newer version of HTML. It's HTML5. It's quite possible that that's what's going on. I know in the different browsers you've got options or preferences where you can go in, and what you might want to do is go into the area where, you know, for linking and turn it off, close your browser down, and then start it back up again and turn it back on. And close it down, and then open it up, and see if that, you know, resets it. Sometimes these, you know, even with simple problems with iDevices, whether it's a tablet or an Android or a smart, what any kind of smartphone, and you're experiencing problems, is actually just shutting them down and start, you know, and turning and restarting, and then turning the feature back on. So.
Well, I restart regularly.
Right. Wow. But what I'm saying is to actually go into the browser and change the setting and then get out of it and then go back into it and turn
so
it back on.
Which setting about link? What is it?
There, if you go, you know, I'm not sure exactly where it is, but if you go under options, there'll be usually there are tools or preferences, and you just have to look at the tabs and the choices. And sometimes they're a little bit buried, but it'll talk about, you know, linking and hyperlinking, where you can, you know, change where those things are either turned on or turned off, or if they're underlined or not underlined, you know, and how they're highlighted, different colors. So there are ways to change those settings.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Kim in Kewaskum, I want to give you a chance to join in. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi. Good.
I've got a, thanks for taking my call. I've got a OS 8 system, AMD 645, 4 gigabyte of RAM, 64-bit. Got three or four, maybe five different sound cards on it. And what I'm getting is, irrespective of which sound card I'm using, so the onboard one, the Julia card, the Sound Blaster, which I put throughout my system, stereo system in the house, I'm getting a static. And I noticed that when I was recording some old vinyls through my Julia card. Well, and I tried some other stuff, and irrespective of which card I have online at the moment, if I'm multitasking, and I guess an old man shouldn't be doing that anymore, but I'm doing that with the PC, I seem to get some static. Now, one other thought that just came to mind, gentlemen, is that I'm not too sure this happened before I installed OS 8. any ideas of what I could do to resolve this issue, please?
So when you say you're getting static, you're hearing it over the speaker? Are you hearing it through headphones or?
That doesn't matter what speakers I'm using. It's over the speakers. Yes, sir.
Okay. So one thing comes to mind. Have you tried changing to different speakers, just to rule that out?
Well, if I'm using the speakers at my PC, and then I use the Sound Blaster and go to the speakers throughout the house, yes, I have. I've done that.
Okay, so
different driver, they're different drivers, different speakers.
Okay. Okay. Number of things that I would check. Number one, device drivers are all current. I would put it, do a search out there on the internet as related to static and, the products that you're using and see if there are any discussions or feedback on that. Another thing is, you said this started happening when you upgraded the operating system?
I can't say that, but it is something that comes into the formula.
Okay. Let's say it isn't, and that it maybe existed right before you did that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That you may want to see if there's some kind of way to insulate. There might be a card that's suspect that's actually causing the interference because of proximity. These cards have a variety of different, components on them, and you've obviously bought multiple versions of sound cards for a reason. The interaction between two of them or three of them may have come into play simply by upgrading the OS and something, it was like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
It put it over the edge to create this new, symptom that you're experiencing.
I'll give it a try.
So, yeah. That's another, maybe moving the cards, maybe pulling one of the cards out and see if the static, goes away. Or you may have to take one card out, see if it goes away. If it doesn't go away, you put that card back in, you put another one in, maybe turning off the onboard one. So there's a lot of permutations of a solution that you have to look at to see what works. But I would probably do the searching online to see if there's someone out there that may be able to enlighten you, or maybe a company, one of the products, has already been exposed to this. Because having more than two sound cards in a system is not typical. So,
well, there aren't maybe... Excuse me for interrupting, Peter. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to say different sound cards. I have one sound card,
okay,
and the other ones are on board, and the other ones are drivers for, Sound Blaster.
Okay.
So now, if that's what you mean, then I understand.
Yeah, so having multiples of that is not typical.
Okay.
So that's where the challenge comes in. You have to deal with all those different permutations from a software, an operating system, and then, the devices that you're talking to see, remove something and see if it goes away, or, change it up and see if it goes away. And I'm not saying going back to, the prior OS, but you have to factor in that there are multiple things that you're going to have to try to see if something sheds light on what's causing the problem.
Good luck, Kim. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Our guest today is we talk about your personal computer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. If you want to join us, you can call at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you that way as well. Tom in Oconee County, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi, I have a HP Pavilion laptop, 6-month-old Windows 7. And yesterday, I'm composing an email with Google and online, and set the laptop aside for a couple minutes. Return, the screen is black. There's a red little window popped up saying that it couldn't save the Google file. It has some big, long file name. But then I finally do a hard shutdown, turn it back on, and it says it can't, there's no hard drive.
Hmm.
I call HP, they say hard drive is gone. So what I'm wondering, they'll replace the hard drive, it's under warranty, but I'm worried about my data, of course.
Right.
And they just want to they just want me to return the old hard drive, end of story. What I'm wondering, is there any way to recover that data from the hard drive?
One is you could take the drive out and see if, in fact, that is what the problem is. I've actually taken laptops into retail places where you've got, a service contract, and they say, okay, well, we'll deal with it. And, they switch out the hard drive, and, in fact, the hard drive still worked. They just didn't, explore it to the point where, there was other problems with that laptop.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't accept at face value that the hard drive is actually, gone and done.
But,
it's you said it's a new laptop, right?
Yeah, six months old.
Yeah,
they had me take out the hard drive and reinsert it. I think they were just trying to check, make sure the connector was solidly connected.
Right. But what I'm saying is you need an external hard drive kit that will interface with that drive. And they sell those at retail, but they also sell them online. And, I don't know what the prices are, but, let's say online to retail, they're anywhere from probably $10 to maybe $30 or $40. And what that allows you to do is you take the hard drive and then plug it into this external kit, and then you can plug it in to another computer to see if you can actually talk to it.
Okay. Yeah, I do have an external hard drive. I have what you're talking about.
Okay, but do you have a kit where you can actually take that drive and put? Okay,
great.
So, and that typically the newer systems are using what's called an SATA interface. So you can attempt to do that and see if you can look at the drive and see if there is life left to it, and then attempt to get your data off of it. If that's not the case, then more than likely what's happened is maybe the motor has failed. And, if you're really desperate and there's a lot of good stuff on it, there are services out there where they can, take a look at it and attempt to recover your data off of it. But they are costly, which leads to the next thing. Next time, make sure that you're using some kind of device to back it up so that at least you've got, most of your data covered, in the event of a crash. But I never accept at face value that, the laptop has died and the hard drive is no longer accessible, because I just did one recently and nothing would come up. Well, then the assumption is the laptop's dead. Is the hard drive dead? Well, I took the hard drive out and I had access to the data. So
I appreciate your skepticism, because that's the way I felt. I'll follow your instructions. I really appreciate that.
Other thing that I think I've heard people try, and how long was your laptop on when you had the crash? How long had you been using it?
That particular day?
Yeah. Do you remember?
Maybe a couple hours.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 hours. 3 hours.
I think what someone mentioned, and this might be worthy of trying, is actually putting it, if it doesn't work in the external drive and you can't gain access to it, is to maybe put it in the freezer and chill it down.
The hard drive or the computer?
The hard drive. It's worth, if you can't gain access to the hard drive as an external drive, then that's basically telling you that the hard drive's not working. Maybe chilling it down and then, hooking it up to the external kit and then attempting it again, maybe you might luck out and it might work. Because it's kind of like, what do you got to lose? If you're going to invest in the service to have the data taken off, that's a different thing. But if you're not, maybe putting it in the freezer for, a half hour and then, putting it in that external kit and trying it again to see if it'll work briefly for you, might be worth it.
I usually use it in cool environments, and I had noticed that the whole computer seemed to be heating up just before it happened, and the fan was on.
Yeah, that's part of, some of the problems with an even earlier laptops is the fact that they do overheat because they're enclosed in that case. And even though you might have fans going on, you know, it's just still not enough air movement. Or if you have, you know, some people use a laptop on a pillow, not a good thing.
Yeah.
Because that shuts down the heating, you know, vents that are releasing the heat, and you don't get good circulation. So hopefully the people are out there listening and using it on a pillow. Don't do that.
There you go. Thanks, Tom, for calling.
Good luck.
Sharon in Cuba City. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not up on computers very well. I haven't had time to work on mine for several years, but I am sick and tired of getting worms and Trojans on my computer. It's an XP Home.
Okay.
And I would like to update to Windows 7. Now, I have 768 millibytes, and I ran it through an upgrade advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have my upgrade advisor report, but
right.
Anyway. It says that I'd have to do a custom installation of 32-bit Windows 7.
Right.
And then reinstall my programs. Well, I'm just wondering how much I should back up. I don't have to back up my emails on Yahoo. I know that.
Right.
But what should I be backing up?
Well, I can tell Windows 7 likes to have more memory. 768 is probably cutting it close. Usually I like to see a minimum of 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Says I'd have to have 1 gigabyte.
Yeah, you can get away with 1, but 2 actually works a lot better.
Oh, does it?
Yep, and 4 is the max for the 32-bit version.
Uh-huh.
You can go higher, but you'd have to use 64. But, you know, how old is your computer that you're wanting to do this with?
5 years old.
Okay.
6 years old.
You know, the Windows XP is a pretty stable, you know, environment. The
uh-huh.
Microsoft has basically said, you know, we're done with that. They now have Windows 8. Windows 7 had a long run in between. You know, I don't know if I would upgrade your system to Windows 7. You're going to get involved with, you know, a hardware upgrade and, you know, cost of the operating system upgrade. And you might have some issues with some of the software that you want that's running on your present system. So, you know, you talk about, you know, problems with worms and viruses and things like that. What are you using for system protection?
It's supposed to be one of the best. I can't think of it right now. My short-term memory.
Are you using Norton, McAfee?
No, not those.
AVG, Avast, Housecall.
Avast.
Avast.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, that's a good one. Do you keep it current?
Yes, it's supposed to be updated all the time.
Okay.
And I keep getting the notes that says it is.
And updated.
Okay.
Good. Very good.
And you're using Yahoo email, which is good because that's web-based, so that typically doesn't allow you to bring things onto your computer. So are you having problems with your browser? You know, do you feel like you're constantly under attack or...
No.
Okay.
We get messages that Avast has deleted things.
Yep. So it's doing its job.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've got something on it right now,
uh-huh.
and we don't know what it is.
Okay.
But I guess if we leave it on overnight, it'll probably be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as Avast is set up to do a scan on a regular basis, and it's scanning, you know, your emails and. You're probably doing the best you can do. I can tell you if you upgrade to the next system, you know, you probably want to take a look at some kind of Apple, you know, like an Apple Mini,
uh-huh.
which is very user-friendly. You're not going to have much issues with viruses or worms or malware. And I'm going to guess in terms of what you're using your system for is probably for some, you know, word processing, email, maybe some spreadsheet use,
YouTube,
some accounting, and maybe some, you know, other entertainment stuff and not much more than that. Does that sound about right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, an Apple Mini would probably be a good solution for you, and you wouldn't have to worry about dealing with worms and viruses.
Yeah. And
they're not very expensive. Yeah. They're about $500, and you could probably still use the same monitor that you're using.
Thank you for calling, Sharon. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, and he will be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Computers can be a tool, they can be a toy, sometimes both at the same time, but however we use them, it's always hard to keep up with the latest news and product releases, and maybe you feel like you've been keeping up with those new developments. Maybe not. Larry Mueller here, glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Peter Green of Infostar.com here until 12:30 to give you and I some advice and to answer your questions. And he'll also share this month's top 10 list of useful websites. You can join in the conversation. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. That's fine. Or go to my Facebook page. To go there, just go to Facebook, type in The Larry Mueller Show. It'll take you right there. And while you're there, click like, and we will send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back with Peter Green right after the news. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk computers with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Pete's an independent computer consultant, and he comes by the first Monday of every month to help us with our computer issues. Pete, thanks again for taking time to be with us. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, he's great, Larry.
You always start this portion of the program with a top 10 list, a list of 10 great places to go for information.
All right, so we're going to start off for April Fool's Day. This is no joke. Yeah. It's the current top 10. If you go to Infostar.com and click on current top 10 or top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date, they're all there. First one is called iPhoneLife.com. News, apps, tips, best sites. It's an online magazine for iDevices. Number two is what I mentioned earlier, and the parent site is called Danike, Danike.com. And it's by Michael Gern, doctor of pharmacy. He came up with Pocket Pharmacist, and it's to help you with drug interactions, and it's available for both iDevices, tablets, and Android smartphones and tablets. And Pocket Pharmacist and Pocket RX, when I have it on my iPhone, that's what it's called. This Pocket Pharmacist was ranked number one as the paid medical app in iPhone and iPad during 2011 and 2012. And just read the reviews. You know, the
fabulous
reviews.
I
researched to get to this one. I'm not saying the other ones don't do it, but I researched to get to this one. I was like, wow, no wonder why. Because it's just not people using it. It's people in the industry that are using it.
Doctors and pharmacists.
Right.
And $2.
Yeah, $1.99 plus tax. And the other thing that's interesting is this, one of the pharmacists actually uses it so you can reorder your prescriptions through it as well. So that's another side thing through it. Number three is called Emulator-Zone, and it's been up since 1997. So if you're into gaming systems, this talks about game emulators and how to just get into all the old systems as well as, well, I wouldn't say the new ones because there really aren't emulators for the new ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, like PlayStation 3 and so forth. So anyhow, number four is called chillingeffects.org, and it monitors the legal climate for Internet activity. It's maintained by the University of San Francisco School of Law, dealing with copyright issues and things like that. Number five, if you want to play around with a friend or family member with texting them from something other than your cell phone or smart device, it's called Textem, so TextEM.net, and it's a resource to allow you to send and receive text messages. Number six is called Yontoo, Yontoo.com, and it's been online since 2006. They claim to have created a tool that allows users to maximize their Internet experience for whatever that may mean, just check them out. Number seven, it's that time of year, people looking into house buying. So there's a website that's got all sorts of online mortgage calculators to help you, and it's called myamortizationchart.com. Number eight has over 15,000 active businesses posted for sale, and it's called mergernetwork.com. And number nine, we alluded to HTML5. Well, there's a site out there called HTML5boilerplate.com, and it helps you to build fast, robust web apps and sites, and it's used for developers or for people that just want to start going with it. And there was an application that was mentioned probably within the last month or two, real popular, rising in the news, called Snapchat for using your smartphone to snap pictures real quick. Well, there's a site called TwitPic to share your photos and videos as they happen, so a similar kind of thing. So TWITPIC.com, so have fun with that one too.
All right, and all those are up on your website at infostar.com.
Yep.
All right. Pat in Elm Grove, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi. My husband has AVD and Norton antivirus, and recently we started getting this pop-up screen that says it detected the JS/fish virus.
Okay.
What do you do about it?
What I would do is probably, if you've got protection on your system and something keeps flashing up about that, I would do a search on that and see if there is, number one, a specific removal tool or did you say you have Avast or AVG?
AVG.
AVG. I would probably go to AVG's website and do a search on it and see, if there's some comments or notations as related to the message on your system and their product, and if it's compromised their product, see what they're saying about it. Because if it's something that's been dealt with, then it shouldn't be, constantly flashing on your system.
No.
Some of them require specific tools, so they may have made it so it's like inert, it can't do anything to your system, but yet it still has remnants. So there may be something specific that you have to do to completely eliminate it so it doesn't, give you these messages anymore.
Do you have to worry that it's infected anything?
I would be proactive in doing what I said. I wouldn't just let it linger and keep seeing the message. I would look into it sooner rather than later.
There you go, Pat. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Tony and Hickson, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I keep getting pop-ups to cure my problem of computer being slow.
Okay.
And I wondered how are these legitimate, or how do I check and be sure they're
pop-ups? What I would do is, it sounds like you have pop-ups turned on in your web browser that you're using. So whether it's Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, or any web browser, what I would do is turn those off. And you can also have it set up so it asks you for permission, and the pop-up could launch the site in a different window. Advertisers on different websites use pop-ups, and commercial websites where you might be visiting to purchase something use those as ways of making you aware of a special offer or a survey they might be trying to conduct. So if you find them annoying, I would just probably turn it off. But if you still want to see some of them, then you should probably say, ask my permission before, opening it up.
All right. Good luck. Joel in Madison. Hi.
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 I've got two hopefully quick questions. I'm working with a HP Pavilion DV7 laptop, Vista's operating system, and it's been freezing up quite frequently lately. I did take it to Best Buy, and they ran a quick diagnostic and said it's not the hard drive. So that's the first one. And then the second one is, I have some programs I was playing with downloading some computer games, and then I decided I didn't want them, so I uninstalled them. They only partially uninstalled. And so when I go on to my what programs do you have, they're not on that list. But when I restart my computer or start the computer, I have to clear past that there's a problem. We can't open this thing for you.
Right.
You know, so okay. Somehow it's shadowed there,
right.
But I can't delete it.
Okay. What I would do is it sounds to me like there's just some stuff going on with your system registry. And to make your system probably stop freezing, you know, it's not a guarantee. But what I would look at is some of the programs that are trying to start up and may have been either uninstalled or no longer active on your system but are being referred to when your computer starts up,
right.
Is you can, let's see. One is I would download an application called CCleaner.
I've already done that.
Have you run the registry cleaner?
I have run it. It helped a lot, but okay. It still freezes periodically.
Okay. The other thing I would look at is, I'm trying to remember how to do this. Oh, okay. If you click on start and then in the empty box type in msconfig, msconfig, and hit enter.
Right.
And then if you go to the startup tab,
mm-hmm.
Make note of what is all checked off.
Okay.
And then you can research this on the internet. You know, what do you need for, like, Vista startup?
Okay.
You know, versus what you don't need.
Okay.
And just, you know, you can put them back in, you know, to see what works well and what doesn't work well. But there will probably be a lot of checkboxes checked.
Right.
And what's going on is your system is referring to some of those links, and they're no longer active, and you just need to remove them.
Okay.
And your system will run a lot better because it's no longer trying to access things that are either not available or it's being told to, and it's like confused because
okay.
They're not there.
All right. Now, here's the thing. I'm not real computer savvy.
Okay.
And so when it says, do you want to remove this one, it's like, I don't know what I need and what
okay.
I don't need.
Well,
it's all Greek to me.
Right. So that's why what you should do is, number one, I do a little research on Vista startup and, you know, put in the word necessary. And
okay.
you'll probably come up with a number of Vista pages that discuss the Vista startup and programs that are being referred to.
Okay.
Then when you type in msconfig and you get the list of tabs and you'll see the startup tab, you'll see that there's all those checkboxes, and I'm going to almost guarantee there's probably a lot of them checked off.
Right.
Just you know, take the time to write them down and what's checked off.
Okay.
And uncheck them. And then as you reboot, you'll reboot your system, and you'll see how it interacts when it comes back up. And then you'll try to work with it and you know, see how it behaves. And you might find that it's just fine with what you eliminated all those things that were checked.
Okay.
And if everything's working fine, then you don't need to put anything back. If
okay.
something's not working right, you might want to put, you know, look at what you got answers for when you did the research online. And it says, okay, you need this one for, you know, to make sure something else works right. So I'm just saying you're going to want to put one or two of them back and see how it reacts after that. And
okay.
each time you have to reboot it. So
okay.
it's not a fix that's going to take 5 minutes. You might be at this for maybe a half hour to an hour to
okay.
tweak your system to get it to restart and work well. And then after you get it right, then you're going to want to use System Restore to make a backup or create a new access point so that you could go back to it in case you reinstall another program that creates problems for you.
Got it. And this would be causing things like if I'm working in the middle of the day and suddenly things start freezing?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Good luck, Joel.
And then how about the thing where programs have only partially uninstalled?
Yeah.
Only partially uninstalled. If you take the time, if you know where the programs are, if you take the time, you need to reboot it in safe mode. So before you see Windows, when you reboot your system and you see right when Windows says it's starting, you have to hit the F8 key. So you might want to start hitting it before, and then you can start it up in safe mode. And then you can use Windows Explorer to go to those places where those files are, and you can delete them. If you do it in the regular Windows mode, it will more than likely have a lock on them and won't allow you to remove those files. So that's why you have to use safe mode.
And good luck, Joel. Thank you for calling. Jeff in Eau Claire, it's on to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I heard you talking to an earlier caller, and it kind of reminded me of a question I had wondered about. Just recently, last week, I upgraded my system from Windows XP to Windows 7, mm-hmm. and my scanner isn't working. When I install Windows 7, it asked me if I wanted the 32-bit edition or the 64-bit edition.
Right.
And I thought, well, bigger is usually better, so I chose 64. I do have 4 gigs of RAM.
Right.
But since then, my scanner isn't working. Mm-hmm. It worked on XP
yep.
and Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And according to some cursory research I did, it should work with Windows 7 32-bit edition.
Right.
And number one is, does that sound like something that happens?
It
would work with one and then not with the other? And then number two is, would I want to go back to 32-bit, or is that easy? Would I lose my files and settings?
Well, the answer to that is yes, that does happen, and there are differences between the 32 and 64. There are some programs that do work in the 32-bit version of Windows, but not in the 64. In terms of your scanner working, one thing is, and you've probably already done this, you know, make sure you have the current driver. There might be a compatibility. You might be able to run it in a compatibility version. So you'll have to go into the properties of the startup of that program that's talking to your scanner and see if you can get it to run in the 32-bit version. But it is possible that won't work in your 64-bit environment.
Okay.
And so you are correct in that, you know, the 4 gigs of RAM or higher will be recognized by the 64, but the 4 gig limit is in the 32-bit version. So you would have been okay. And if you can't expand beyond 4 gigs of RAM in your system, then you probably would have been better off just going with the 32-bit version of Windows 7.
Well, if I go back to it, will I have to reset all my likes or whatever? I mean, what I have on like my desktop and all my icons and everything, or will it remember all that stuff?
No, you can't just like drop back and say okay, run in the 32. You actually have to do a fresh install to get it to install
unfortunately.
Correctly.
There you go.
I wish I could say yes, but it's you make the choice one way or the other.
There you go, Jeff. Good luck. Thank you for calling. We had an email from Jane in Rothschild who wants to purchase a new computer. Several friends are recommending a Mac. She says, I've never used a Mac. I'm wondering if you could give the pros and cons of a Mac versus something like a Dell that I've always used.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can get the Microsoft software for a Mac, but somebody said there might be an annual fee for re-upping that software.
Well, what's going on, you know, a number of questions there. Number one is, you know, I've transitioned people from Windows to Mac. You know, you ask yourself the question, what am I using the computer for? Then you find the software, and then you find the hardware. So if you come up with what am I using the computer for and the software is available on the Mac and the PC, what is my investment in the hardware? If what you need to, what you're going to use the computer for is going to be, will work fine in a system that says, let's say it's a desktop and it's in the $500 price range in terms of an investment. A Mac Mini fits in that category, and that gives you storage. It does not give you a DVD drive, but you can add one to it.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the video card. It gives you the keyboard, gives you the mouse or slide pad. All you need to add is a monitor. In a desktop environment, same goes for PC. You know, cost-wise, there are options available from different manufacturers. If you're looking for a laptop, that's a different story. The Mac is more costly in a laptop environment versus a Windows PC. So you know, with that being said, as far as the model of the software and how you pay for that, companies are going towards a almost like a lease or rent option where you use the software over the course of the year and you pay for it monthly, or maybe you save a little bit and pay for it annually. And then the upgrades come periodically through online. If you buy it as a DVD and install it, you can choose not to upgrade it and stay put with what you have. But if you need to have all the latest and greatest features, you add, you know, the updates and then eventually upgrade it online. So there are different models out there. Some of them are changing. Eventually, you're going to change to that lease version where you just have to be buying it online, and it allows them to validate and check their users. And that's why they're moving towards that.
Randy in Green Bay, quick question from you.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I have Windows 7 on my laptop, about a year old, and I can shut down the Windows program by clicking on shut down, but if it goes into hibernate or sleep mode, it says Windows did not shut down successfully, trying to automatically fix, and then it'll load Windows. And I tried doing system restore, and I did a AVG scan, but neither thing corrected that. Do you have any ideas how I could restore that feature?
What I would probably have you done system updates on your system?
As far as regular window updates from Microsoft.
Okay. Yeah. What I would probably do is I would turn, there's a, in the power options in your control panel.
Yes.
I would probably turn off, you know, make some changes to the hibernate mode when it goes into that and shut some of those things off, and then shut your system down and reboot it, and then turn them back on and see how the system interacts. There have been noted problems with that feature with different manufacturers and, you know, the Windows operating system. Mm-hmm. So you may be able to reset it by just doing that, going through your control panel, making the changes to your power options, saving it, shutting your system down, bringing it back up, and then changing it back to the way it was and see how it interacts then.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Pete, we had an email from Pete in La Crosse, the gentleman who called in with the Kaspersky ransom software.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Trojan horse, nothing to do with the software. It's everything about getting the credit card.
Yep.
He removed this Trojan for a friend at work using safe mode with networking, malware bytes, and CCleaner.
Yep.
They will then need to restart the computer in normal mode, make sure it works, then rescan the computer again with a complete scan. Mm-hmm. The restore points are gone. They will need to create a new software point. So,
yep, like I said, what they do is they know that they're
very
they've been
difficult
found.
To fix.
And, yeah, and that's why in my tips I include that. I think it's Nuber or one of them, but there's that one that catches at stealth programs because some of them just kind of hang around in the background. You got to really get rid of them.
Pete, always a pleasure.
It's great, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You'll be Peter Green of Infostar.com. We'll be back the first Monday of next month, and we'll sure look forward to that. Tomorrow at 11, UW Varsity Band Director Mike LaCrone joins us for a preview of the band's spring concert. Then 11:45, we'll get some great advice on how to buy the most nutritious food possible on a budget. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.